On this episode of ITAV, Amazon is buying a wireless router system, the next generation of 5G, and getting your customers to understand cybersecurity. All that and more, next on ITAV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 27, recorded Friday, February 22nd, 2019. Alexa Network.
AV Nation is brought to you by Shure. Sound extraordinary.
This is the ITAV show, the monthly look at how the IT and the AV spaces kind of come together are impacted by each other. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. With us to discuss the news of this month, first and foremost, her name is Victoria Ferrari, and she is from Netrix. Welcome, ma'am.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Also with us, a buddy I got to hang out with for a little bit at ISA. His name is Chris Fitzsimmons, and he is from Biamp. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. It's an interesting, Victoria and I are both in the central time zone in the U.S., and Chris got up early and into the office early enough for us on a Friday, so we appreciate that. He's in Beaverton, Oregon, so out on the West Coast. So, first story I want to cover here, guys, is this story comes from The Verge. Amazon is buying a home router, mesh router company called Eero. Real quickly about Eero. Eero actually is what I have at my house. So I saw this story and I was immediately piqued. A guy in the residential space by the name of Frank White said in some of the comments on a couple of these stories, Eero is home networking for grandmas. And I would give him that, right? I would absolutely agree with that because it takes about 15 minutes to set up. You have a hub, you have a central router and switch in one, and then you have these little beacons around the house if you want to expand your network, basically. But that's not what I wanted to really, you know, what I wanted to get in on is the fact that now Amazon is suddenly in the networking business, right? So you've got control, you've got obviously book sales and other sales, you have an e-commerce site, all this other technology, but now Amazon is getting into the networking industry. According to Amazon's SVP of devices, we are incredibly impressed with the Eero team and how quickly they invented a Wi-Fi solution that makes connected devices, quote unquote, just work. So this is absolutely in the wheelhouse of Amazon and absolutely to support some of their devices and make sure that their devices work. Chris, I'm going to start with you on this. The fact that Amazon is now in the networking industry and the networking device manufacturer or network device area, and the fact that they are already getting into corporate systems with Amazon Business and Alexa for Business, how is this walk going to happen? How is this marriage going to look as Amazon starts saying, oh, we have networking gear now, right? To the corporate IT, to the corporate folks that are looking at, they're looking at their Cisco switches and they're looking at their HP switches and going, you want me to put an Amazon in here? Mm-hmm. How is that going to work?
I don't know. Like, I would never be the one that says Amazon has made a mistake or is not, because clearly the gentleman that runs it's doing very well for himself. But yes. I think that the point you just made there about switch vendors is the lift for them. That's real tough. Because, you talked about Amazon Business and Alexa for Business, and I'm not sure how well that's doing. I have no insight into the success of that or not. I've been to Amazon's office and seen them use it, but I've no idea whether they convinced Toyota or someone to, I don't know what the reference projects are like. I think that on the resi front, it's really cool. And it's also necessary for them. I was reading this Verge article. They're talking about Google and Samsung and Linksys already having these mesh systems. Google is the important player there. I didn't actually realize they had home networking gear. And so Amazon has to, basically, because the thing in the wrinkle in the Alexa setup right now is the weird handshaky thing you have to do to get it to connect to your Wi-Fi, right? You have to give it somehow. You have to tell it what the password is. And with a headless device with no user interface and two buttons, that's tough. So we use the app and it works pretty well. It's a pretty good solution to the problem. But this, gives them the killer solution to the problem, which is I know I control the Wi-Fi router, so I can have it trust my device and tell it the password. Boom. In the corporate space, I don't know. I really struggle with the idea that what is essentially residential grade networking gear is going to get any traction from a corporate AV IT manager for a decade, maybe 5 years, right? They're going to have to like go away and come back with something that's ugly and gray and has all the properties and manageability that a enterprise grade network switch has. You know, we already, AV already struggles with this, right? We recommend people buy network, you know, industrial grade network switches. And in some cases we insist on using a particular one, or you can't use this model, you have to use that model. And that's within the commercial strata of networking equipment. So I'm not sure how that would fly. And I'm not sure what they would envisage this kind of Eero device doing in the enterprise space. Because if we're talking about wireless collaboration products, those require a fair amount of beef, right? That's not a low bandwidth application. So we're already seeing, I mean, here at Viant, right? We just put a new wireless network in. There is a wireless access point every 25 feet in this building. I'm not kidding. You could probably cook eggs here on the wireless network. And that's, you know, we're not a giant company. We got like 100 odd employees in this building and 150 down the road in the factory. And we have big Fortinet upside down things with antennas off every 25 feet. So I'm not sure what this family of devices does for Amazon. It's a platform. It's an expertise base. It's an engineering group. It's not a product for the corporate space at this time.
All right. Victoria, Chris mentioned the fact that this would be heavy lifting for Amazon to get over the hump of entrenched, long-held brand loyalties when it comes to the corporate network. But they are getting the engineering expertise. They are getting the engineering chops with this acquisition. Is that something that is that a wall that they can't get over, though?
I definitely, you know, don't think it's a wall they can't get over. I mean, if you look at the success they've had on their cloud services for corporate, the AWS that they've, you know, deployed and they're getting into, and I mean, they're taking over a lot of the market share there. So they have that part of it, you know, that's on the back end, on the infrastructure side. And then if they're trying to get in on the device side, you know, with switches and stuff, there are a lot of hurdles to overcome. For example, you know, companies have their set security standards that, you know, they put Cisco and Juniper and other infrastructure manufacturers through the ringer to get them, you know, certified and set to their security policies. And so they're going to be hard pressed to change, you know, big companies who've already gone through the process and spent the money to secure those devices and make sure that they meet their standards. But at the same time, I mean, they could get in with smaller companies that, you know, don't have as stringent of security, policies and things. And just like they've done with their cloud solutions. And so, you know, as much as I don't like the thought of Alexa in a boardroom, I think it's inevitable. I think that, you know, they're going to get there. And, you know, I have two of them in my own house, and I know setting up the network was kind of a pain. I mean, we had, you know, dead spots and we wanted things to work out by the pool, for example. And so this acquisition of this switch company, you know, gives users the ability to set that up and to overcome those things within their house. And so, you know, as companies, things are so backwards now, you know, 10, 15 years ago it was commercial driving resi, but now it's like, you know, people, we used to tell our customers, oh, you have to have a commercial display. Oh, you need to, you know, there's these power requirements and you have to have an RS 232 port and blah, blah, blah. But now, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a commercial display except in, you know, specialty places that maybe are running at 24/7. Even then, you know, the customer's like, well, I can go get a TV at Best Buy for half the price. So, you know, I think it's inevitable. I think they'll get over the wall and, you know, we'll be putting in, you know, Alexas in boardrooms soon. I think we need to definitely brush up on it and understand the limitations. At this point, no, I agree with Chris. It's not ready for prime time. It's not commercial grade. And, you know, there's tons of risks and things to consider. But I think the end users understand that. I think they're, you know, at this point they get it, even though they may have their executives yelling at them, hey, I want this, you know, here. But it's definitely something, though, you know, Jeff Bezos is a genius and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, he will. I think the analogy for me here is Zoom. I really do. Mm-hmm. Like a tiny, aggressive startup that just kicks down a bunch of doors. Now, Amazon is not a tiny, aggressive startup. It's a giant, aggressive corporation. So it's got bigger boots, frankly. So having thought about it, and Victoria's dead right, they will overcome it. The question is how quickly and in what form. We may not even recognize the products that finally penetrate the commercial space, right? They won't be called Alexa. They won't look like Alexa. They'll have all of the desirable capabilities of Alexa, the kind of the smarts and the voice control or whatever, you know, the intelligence. There's no way that the data gathering BS that goes with Alexa can possibly exist in the corporate space. It just won't fly. And they can say, Amazon can say as much as they want, oh no, we don't track data. We know it's obvious, it's proven that stuff is going on, that, and I get my tinfoil hat out in a minute, you know, sound like a conspiracy theorist.
They are getting, absolutely.
They are gathering data and they are using it to make business decisions, and enterprises will spot that a lot quicker than your gran, who's just installed her Eero router, right? That's just, so that kind of stuff will have to change. They'll have to change how they behave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or they'll have to sell it back to their customers and use it as a, you know, whatever analytics tool, but it's gonna morph before it kind of.
And see, that's actually where I see it going more than it going away. Them, you know, selling it as a feature,
They'll be transparent.
Yeah. They'll be transparent once they get caught. And they'll sell it back as a feature. As we can tell you, you know, how many times this room was used. If you use an RFID or some sort of key card system, who was in the meeting, you know, this, that, and the other. That's useful information.
That's the one of the most valuable pieces of data that an AVIT manager can have at the moment, which is the stuff that I convinced you to buy for your enterprise, Mr. Executive, delivering what I said it was going to. That's really the only matter. The only question that counts for an AVIT manager these days is, I went to bat for this system and guess what? Productivity is up 20%, meeting attendance is up 5%, room usage is up 50%. Those are the metrics that AVIT managers care about.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually in the correct instantiation, this kind of technology could be very important for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next story is from Ars Technica. Qualcomm has released their second generation 5G solution. It's called the Snapdragon X55. To go along with the new modem is a new 5G millimeter wave RF antenna called the QTM 525, which actually obsoletes another version of theirs. But what I wanted to get into is this new generation, this new chipset from Qualcomm, which is their second gen 5G. Victoria, I want to start with you on this. Where does 5G belong and where is it going to belong in both the IT and the AV space?
Well, based on what I read, it's pretty exciting. I think, you know, a mobile network is, you know, everywhere, right? And everybody uses it and they need it. And they're touting that 5G can be better than some of the broadband connections that we have as far as, you know, bandwidth and speed and compression and all of that. And so if that's true, you know, if they can make that happen, that can open up so many possibilities. You think about, you know, virtual reality and trying to send 4K video over the network and all of that. I mean, I think it's just really exciting. But I've also thought, you know, we have the technology to invent flying cars, for example. And, you know, why aren't there flying cars? Well, because we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have, you know, the right ways to manage traffic like that up in the air. And so that could be part of what holds back the 5G revolution, because it's, you know, a big spend on the existing infrastructure. But, you know, if all of those things come to play, you know, 5G can change our world, I think.
Absolutely. You definitely can. Chris, you do work for a manufacturer. You work for Biamp. I'm not going to ask you to divulge any company secrets. That will get either of us in trouble. But just from your 50,000 foot view as somebody who's, you know, only worked in this industry, but covered the industry as well, where do you see 5G landing for those in AV or IT?
I think it will land in AV and IT a bit harder than it did would potentially in mobile telephony. Actually, reading a bit about it, it has power needs, right? It has, we already hate the fact that this thing can't last more than about a day and a half. So I'm not sure a 5G one is really something I want in my pocket, but the networking capability, the freedom of installation has huge potential for tethered devices, right? Things that have power inlets on them don't care. And it's, so I'm kind of interested in where that can go. This article itself is like, Qualcomm hasn't quite solved the problem yet, which is it's in two components, and really manufacturers would like to dump system on a chip in a box and move on. So yeah. from an adopter's point of view, from a manufacturer's point of view, who might, you know, may or may not, whatever, buy a Qualcomm 5G implementation, I really don't want to buy this one because I've got to buy two things. I've got to buy a radio and a chip. I then have to build a device. I have to go get it certified, because if it's not a single piece, then I have to go certify it. But I can't buy this from Qualcomm that's as certified for export or whatever. So there's a way to go on this. It's great that they're pushing the boundary, and I think from a commercial AV point of view, the tech's exciting. This implementation is not. I think that's really where it's going to go. But then, like we said earlier, this is consumer tech driving commercial. I'm trying to think. There are not many cellularly, that's not even a word, mobile connected AV devices. I can't think of too many that have SIM cards in, right? And transmit, receive data via a G network as opposed to standard Wi-Fi. The only example off the top of my head I can think of is this Fortinet wireless router that a lot of our sales guys use, which actually has a SIM card in it. So you can use it to create a little mini demo network if you've got a rack of stuff that you're shipping around and you want to go demo to Sierra or whatever you want to do. It's also got a wireless access point in it. And if you want the internet, it's got a SIM card in the back. But I'm not aware of many, I'm sure there are dozens that I haven't thought of now, of AV devices that have like internet connectivity native to them. There may be some smart home devices and that kind of thing. But I feel like this is possibly more related to our previous story, right? In terms of connecting devices together inside a building without having to put them on the core plan. I remember a conversation I had a yonks ago when I was still at the magazine with a gentleman from T-Mobile's research group in Germany. And he was working with printer companies to internet connect printers, because actually what it allowed them to do, I can't remember which company it was, Xerox or Canon or whatever, they realized that putting printers on corporate networks from a management point of view was kind of okay. They ran into the same problem that AV has, right? Which is, hey, what's this on my network? It's a bit more intelligent than I'd like. What does it do? These printer companies want to sell managed services. They want to sell monitoring, and they want to send you your ink before you know you need it, because really printers are things to pour ink into. That's a printer model. So they wanted to kind of proactively maintain and manage these things. But there was no way in hell that a end user was going to give a printer internet access. It was just not going to happen. And so they started putting mobile chips in them. They put 3G chips in them so that they didn't have to go anywhere near the corporate network. It, you know, went straight out to a cloud service. It was an IoT printer. And so I feel like this is a real opportunity for AV here. This kind of connectivity, if it's fast enough, will get a bunch of cool, unlock a bunch of cool kind of IoT behaviors. Once it's packaged in a small enough and easy enough to implement instantiation for a product.
Yeah, actually, and I'm actually aware of a number of integrators who started doing that years ago for the same exact reason, right? They were managing systems and managing services, and they were using, you know, small little NICs.
They call those little modem things that.
Well, not just that, but they were actually installing small Intel NICs, those little small microcomputers, like 150, 200 bucks, with a card built into it. And I don't know if it was T-Mobile or Verizon or whoever here in the States. And they did the exact same reason, is that it was nowhere near the network, right? The corporate network, but they were, once a day, it would call in and it would allow you to report on what's going on with the system. So, all right, last story here, guys. Before we wrap up, I want to get a story from a buddy of ours. His name is Paul Konikowski. He wrote in Commercial Integrator, quote unquote, "Your AV installations are incredibly vulnerable to cyber threats." And Chris, this actually goes to something you and I talked about at ISC. Yes. Chris was on my panel talking about AV network and security. Paul goes on to write about a bunch of different areas, and the threat areas, one is business, reputation, and legal. But the areas that I really wanted to hone in on this is the ways folks are getting into networks and AV networks. Ones he says is unintentional and external, which is a client unknowingly sends an attachment with a virus on it. That's pretty simple and explanatory. unintentionally internal. You bring in a USB, USB drive that is infected. And Chris and I just got back from ISE. And for me, I picked up a number of USB drives.
Which I'm now going to throw in the trash.
You know what? Here's the thing. If you go to the press office, and you remember this, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Go to the press office, and you can just pick up, you know, two dozen USB drives with media kits on it, you know, ostensibly. But you don't know where those things have been.
It was much safer when we just collected reams of paper.
Yes, but it was a lot more arduous because we had to carry the crap.
It made luggage weight a thing.
Well, my first Infocom, I came with an extra piece of luggage. So because of that. Malicious internal, which sounds exactly what it is. Somebody internally to your organization deleting files or copying and stealing things. And then malicious external, which is obviously people trying to get into your system. Chris, I'll start with you on this just because what you and I talked about at ISE. What can we as an industry, right? You as a manufacturer, how can we help your clients, so the integrators, the commercial integrators that are putting this stuff together, but also their clients understand some of these risks?
Yeah, I think there's two things. And this was part of the topic on the panel. We have to, as vendors, we have to educate. And so that means that when it's one thing to implement security features, and we should all be doing that. We should all be making our systems secure and updating our Linux operating systems, all that kind of stuff. But we should also be being as vocal as possible about why we're doing that. I think it's one thing to kind of parent by just telling your kids what to do. The other thing is to explain why you're doing it and help them understand why it's important. And I don't want to sound patronizing. I mean, that my choice of words, it may not be the best, but you know, why do you idiots keep updating your firmware every month? Well, because these threats exist, we've identified them, and we want you to be safe because of these threats. So I think that the thing that the manufacturers can do, should do, is actually enumerate those four things as often as possible, right? Some of them sounds crushingly obvious, and deleting files on your last day at work is like the worst last day prank ever. It's pretty lame. we have to be repetitive, and we have to repeat. That's the way people learn and understand and ingest, is by hearing the same thing. And it would be great if everybody like me said the same thing. I mean, this is kind of where we got to at ISE was, you know, yeah. Wouldn't it be great if there was some kind of agreement between vendors to say the same things about security and follow the same practices and be boring about it? Because what happens is when you do painful things to customers because you've made a security choice, is they go somewhere else where it's less painful. But if everyone's doing the same set of things, then that gets a lot easier and the message is consistent. Because what you can't have is one guy saying, oh, this is the way to do security, and someone else saying, oh, no, actually, this is a much better way, or this is more secure or less secure. That's really challenging and confusing. What's an AV IT manager to believe at that point if no one's able to give him a consistent message? Actually, while we were on this, there was another article next to the Eero article about Nest. Did you share that, or was that something that I just noticed? It's open in the tabs next to all the other ones. And Nest have like gone and locked people out of their accounts. Yeah. They have seen a security breach of some kind, and instead of saying, you need to reset your password, please, they've said, you're locked out. Go reset your password. And I applaud that. It's fabulous. I wish I could do that. But can you imagine what would happen?
But why can't you? No, here's the thing. Why can't you? Right, because it's I have a Nest at home. I didn't get the email. But yeah, I mean, you're the manufacturer of the product. You could say, look, dude, it's
let's just play this out as a scenario, because I had the same conversation with myself. I'm like, hey, Chris, this would be awesome. We'll just lock everybody out. Imagine that I offered a cloud-based AV service of some kind, which I don't. But imagine if I was one of those vendors that does, and I felt that there was a potential compromise to that system, and I locked the northwest of the United States out of my server and said, you must reset your password. How do you think that goes when I shut down some customer's AV system willfully? Do they thank me? Thank you, Mr. Manufacturer, for fixing my security problem, or do they sue me for 3 weeks worth of, you know, or 3 hours
probably, of lost probably business? A little bit of both. And I'm not trying to be funny here, but probably both.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, thinking about it further, you could write terms and conditions. You could put it in your contract, but it's a scary step. Yeah. I absolutely applaud Nest for taking it, but in a competitive landscape, that is a scary step. And I was thinking, okay, so how else do we fix that? Because this was about password security. This is about, you know, that database of a bazillion emails that got stolen. I'm sure that's what drove this decision.
Yeah.
And I really think passwords are a big problem. I think that a lot of you know, there are other problems like insecure protocols and things that can get hacked. But even having made choices about secure protocols, we're still left with this human vulnerability, which is password choice, password recall, password remembering, password rotation, you know, not using 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I'm gonna have to go change my passwords now. It's that simple. So how do we help customers with that basic issue? Because they can do all the smart things in the universe, but if they write their password down in the back of their diary, they might as well just not bother. It's that simple. So
yeah, and I think some of that is, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the panel, is making sure that there are, you know, systems in place that once the integrator commissions a system, right, you know, as soon as they connect to your box, regardless of whose box it is, they have to reset the password. They cannot go any further with the configuration process, with the commissioning process, until they change the password. And you have to have, you know, it has to be so much, so complicated at some level of complication, whether that's the number of characters you have to use or the combination of the types of characters you have to use. I don't know that you as the manufacturer have to go so far as to forcing them to change it so often. I mean, that's something that them and their security team should make that decision, right? And the security team.
We've had questions and inquiries from customers about compatibility with kind of third-party passwording systems, and especially on SageView. Like, can we integrate SageView with password system X? We have a company solution, which is the little keypad things your bank sends you.
Yeah.
They use those, right, as password generators and changers, and they want to know, can we integrate your stuff with that? And I think that's a really interesting idea. Because that actually takes the onus off the manufacturer to be a password security house, which frankly we're not, right? We make AV gear. We shouldn't need to. There's plenty of other people out there that can do that. That kind of thing, I think, is an intelligent way forward, is to allow end users to take a bit more control of their own security system and implement what they want. Now, that doesn't work for everyone. It doesn't work for smaller companies, but I think it's a definite progression.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there are standards, you know, in security that corporations follow, you know, like Chris mentioned, the two-factor authentication. I mean, that's an algorithm that generates a password. You know, that's, there's a lot of ways to be more and more secure. And AV manufacturers really need to tap into those and figure out, how can we play nice? You know, maybe that, like Chris said, they can't, you know, force people to change their passwords and shut down a conference room and not allow them to have calls or, you know, not proceed with their normal business practices. But if they can take steps to help, you know, integrate with other secure things that have been out there for a long time, you know, that's just a really good step in the right direction. Also want to say, in regards to the human factor, you know, I think, I can't remember the statistics I've read, but the majority of security issues are human factors, you know, USB sticks and passwords and opening emails you're not supposed to open. And, you know, I mean, the hackers and malicious intents and those types of things, you know, those exist as well. But those are a much smaller part of what actually, you know, breaches security. So I think it's, you know, if there are things that we can do to help the users and, you know, there are policies and, you know, forcing people to change their password, I think that's genius on Nest's part for the Resi side. For commercial, you know, there are other ways to secure things. And other people way smarter than me have figured all of that out. And the IT industry, you know, has been securing networks and data, and you know, they know how to do that, and they have features and products available. It's just a matter of AV becoming aware of those and playing nice with them.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of it is back into transparency again. If you give an IT security manager information, he can act upon it. He can make intelligent risk management decisions about your equipment. If you don't give him that information, he's going to either not be able to make a smart decision or say, I don't have enough information to make a decision. So guess what my decision is? Not choosing your stuff. It's really straightforward. It's hard. It's scary to sit there and say, hey, Mr. Customer, here's a list of potential holes in my product. Right? That's personally speaking, that is a hard thing to do. It's actually a really scary thing to do. You, as product managers, we're emotionally ingrained in our product, right? We care about them. And when somebody says, hey, I want to take it for pen testing, you go, oh, not because you believe there's anything wrong with it or that it just feels tricky. And I think vendors have to get used to that idea that sharing and being honest about their product and their potential risks is not something that's going to get you hit with a stick. It's a, or upset a customer, or they're going to come back and tell you you're idiots. It's a liberating experience to be giving the customer the empowerment they need to make the decision they want to make. Because every single time we've volunteered for this kind of thing, the customer always is very appreciative and in some cases surprised how forthcoming we're prepared to be and how quickly we can act on the information, right? It's in my interest as a product manager that my stuff is as secure as possible. And when I get told, hey, there's this potential thing here, can you fix it? I'm like, great.
It's an opportunity for you guys to learn as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can't think of everything and you can't, you know, be in every single environment. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, that is going to do it for this episode. Thank you both so much. Ms. Victoria Ferrari, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Check me out. Check out Netrix, netrixllc.com.
All right. And if they want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
LinkedIn or Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And what's your Twitter?
Victoria0429.
All right, very good. Mr. Fitzsimmons, thank you, sir. Always good to hang out with you, as always.
A pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And how do people get a hold of you or BuyAmp?
You can get hold of us at www.buyamp.com. You can email me, chris.fitzsimmons@buyamp.com. Don't send me viruses. Always happy to talk, you know, about these topics with anyone that wants to share a thought or has feedback. You can also get me at Chris Fitz on Twitter, chrisfitzs.
All right, very good. My name is Tim Albright. Don't follow me on the Twitters. It's pretty boring, but go by the website if you would please, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. You'll find this program and a host of others while you're there. Check out our supporters section. These are folks who help us financially, help us bring you ITAV, ISE a couple months ago, and InfoComm coming up in June. And IAMP is one of those. So we thank them for their support. Also, check out our other programs. And coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have a new webinar on the user-centric design. So kind of excited about that. So check all that out and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv.